Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. This is William. We have Ward on today. It's going to be a wonderful conversation, and we are probably heavy into HR tech because that's both of our interests are at the intersections of HR and technology. So we'll probably a heavy dose of HR tech talk today. But I'm really looking forward to the call. This is one of those we had on the schedule that I really wanted to make sure that I was here for. And without any further ado, Ward, how are you doing today?
Hello, William. I'm doing fantastic and really good. Looking forward to having a chat with you.
Yeah, right. So do the audience a favor and kind of introduce you. They probably follow you online and keep up with your good work there. But just do us a favor and introduce yourself.
Sure, I'd be delighted. Spent the past 22 years in the HR industry, mostly working for or building HR tech companies. Started in the early 90s when I left engineering to launch one of the first online job boards. That was before the internet was even commercialized, for anybody that remembers that. And ran that for quite a while, and then ended up working for a variety of the HR tech players out in the space, some small, some large, but all growing and launching new products. And about a year ago, I decided to launch my own HR tech advisory company to help companies evaluate the software out there to help them solve their HR problems.
Well, that's genius. What's great about this is you move from a pathway of, you know, doing the engineering to then really kind of making sense of it from a sales perspective, and, you know, really relating with HR, but relating with them in a way of saying, here's what the technology does, here's why it's important, et cetera, to now kind of furthering the, you know, the careers never make sense in the windshield. They always make sense in the rearview mirror when you can kind of connect the dots, right? So now what you're doing is you're helping people navigate this abyss. And, you know, when I stand in front of an audience and I tell them, hey, listen, there's 22,000 recruiting and HR products in the world, and, you know, these the eyes light up, like, I didn't know that there were that many. I'm like, that's just what I have in a Google Doc. There's probably more than that. I mean, I'm just assuming that I don't have them all. Like, there's more than that. So what's great about the new business is that you're helping people navigate those waters. Well, when someone says, you know, I'm interested in an ATS, you're like, well, okay, well, then, you know, there's 1,200 of those. Let's make that smaller. Like, what are you really trying to do?
Right.
What's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Well, those are, you hit the nail on the head, really, because what I've seen over the years, you know, companies, particularly the HR folks driving these projects, when they're saying, you know what, we think we need an ATS or we need something to help us with our challenges, and, you know, they're very impressionable. The HR people in general aren't technologists, so buying technology is difficult even for IT people, let alone, you know, HR people that don't do it all the time. So after 20 years of watching them struggle with this, I thought, you know what, somebody's really got to be their advocate and help them, particularly the mid-market where, you know, companies maybe can't afford to hire the Deloittes of the world and the, you know, larger consulting firms. I'm acting as their advocate. Really, what's keeping them up at night is what's keeping me up at night.
Well, let's get into this. So some of the steady dose of vendor selection. How should people go about vendor selection? So let's say you've got somebody and whatever the bid is, let's say it's performance management software, because that's pretty easy to attack. They're just unhappy. It's not being adopted. They got to pull the ripcord, whatever they have in there. They just know that they're not going to have it going forward. You know, they reach out to you. Like, what is the process? What should the vendor selection process look like?
Well, the thing that's often skipped, the step that's skipped, is the tragic one, and that is, what are the real business requirements? Particularly now that most companies, at least of any size, have something in place, and a lot of the new purchases are based around replacement. So they look at it and go, okay, well, you know, we're not happy with what we have. We want something better. But they forget to go back to what maybe their business requirements are, particularly if it's changed since the last time they've looked around, and then try to find something that fits their problems or, you know, what's important to the business. How are the executives planning to grow it? And then once they've kind of nailed that down, aligning themselves with one of the executives, say, hey, look, you know, here's what we understand are some of your goals, depending on the organization. HR wants to help. We want to get some updated software to make sure you hit your goals and get that sponsorship. A lot of times companies forget that, you know, and they go off to a conference or something like that, and they get all excited and like, oh, these are really neat things, bells and whistles, you know, and they start going down the road, and then later they go back to get the money or the budget or the permission, and it gets denied, and they're like, oh, darn, now what? So kind of starting with, yeah, what's important to the business, who cares about it, and getting that executive sponsorship, and then kind of go through the regular steps of selection of who the best partner might be.
So what's your take, your unvarnished take on RFPs?
I would say they're 80% a waste of time. If you can boil it down to everyone's time, not just the vendors who usually hate doing them, because a lot of times, you know, sometimes the decisions are already made in advance, or at least people think that they are. And, you know, it's a lot of work for nothing. And at the end of the day, the RFP tends to include tons of stuff that, again, aren't important to the business. So, you know, bells and whistles, like, oh, well, this company has more bells and whistles, they must be better. Doesn't mean anything, right? If they can't deliver on what, you know, what kind of problems you're facing and solve that with the solution. So, yeah, RFPs tend to, I think, be largely misguided instruments. And if it's done right, you can boil that down to the important stuff, keep it simple for everyone. Things go faster, easier, more enjoyable. For everybody that's involved. And frankly, you know, when mistakes are made during the purchasing, whether it be through an RFP or otherwise, guess who gets the blame typically is, you know, the vendor, right? It was their fault that they couldn't deliver. And usually it's because they didn't get those business requirements up front and document them properly in a way that, you know, apples can be compared to apples.
Yeah, okay, so continuing the RFP thing for just a moment, if people do it the right way, and notice that you said keep it simple, give the audience kind of like a tip or trick here, like, okay, if you're going to do the RFP, here's exactly, you know, what should it, if we're going to make the 20% effective out of the 80% that aren't as effective, the 20%, let's say, how do those folks get the most value out of the RFP process?
The folks being the
yeah,
the company that's looking
better
at that 20%. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. How do you, well, throw the ratio out for just a second. How do you make the RFP process better?
Yep. Again, you know, for it's a little bit different depending whether it's the first time you're looking to buy something. So, you know, for example, video interviewing or, you know, mobile recruitment platforms, those kind of things. Maybe new to a company, so it's maybe a different approach there, particularly like point solutions. If you're looking at, you know, broader systems or replacing existing systems, at that point, you know, you want to revisit if you've had requirements before. If you've done an RFP before, you know, look at that and say, okay, let's look in the rearview mirror and say, okay, what did we learn here? Okay, we asked for all this stuff. We only used 30% of what we bought. Let's look at the 30%. Let's boil it down to that. And then let's kind of prioritize those and rank them and say, what's really important to our company today? And then, you know, if you have some vision into the future of the business and where you're growing, if you're becoming more global, things like that, that might be more important, you know, like language and so forth. So taking that into effect and into account, learning from past experience. And then the best way to do that, of course, is to engage a consultant that's done that with other companies, so they can bring insights in and say, well, organizations like yours in the past have, here's where they've made some mistakes and had to live with it or pay the piper for it. You know, let's avoid that and, you know, let's include that in your requirements or maybe not include it. Maybe it's not important, right? Because you might get the wrong partner or solution based on looking for things that aren't important.
All right, so what's your take on pilot programs? The try, you know, before you buy or do a smaller unit, make sure it works in your organization, and then roll out to a much larger organization. What's your take on pilot programs?
I'm a huge fan, huge fan. Doesn't matter what size company you are. I mean, really small companies looking just for some self-service kind of tool, which there's a lot out there. Maybe not a big deal there, obviously, if it's low risk. But, any kind of major system or sizable company, after you get your business requirements, you need to kind of validate them, right? Because I mean, you go out and ask the hiring managers or recruiters or, people that might be using your systems, what are you looking for? The first thing that might come to mind is the pain that they're in. Say, well, I don't want it to do this anymore. I need it to that, and I can't. Go find something that does that for me. Okay, well, that's important, and you need to gather that. But during a pilot, the best things that can come out of that is first to prove that the vendor can deliver on what they promised, and two, it also gives you a checkpoint internally to say, all right, this is what we said was important, but as we're starting to use it in this particular group or division or subset of our potential users, we're finding out that, these 10 things weren't so important after all, and these 10 things that we didn't even realize all of a sudden are becoming major, concerns. So, yeah, pilots are a wonderful way to start a relationship with a potential vendor or partner, and certainly to, prove out and validate the requirements that were important to you.
So, your take on integrations as we kind of look at it, because you've been doing this for a long time, so you've probably heard integrations, at least 1,000 times in your career. What should the HR practitioner really be thinking about right now when they consider, their technology stack, that 13 to 20 different technologies that they've got behind the veil? What should they know about integrations, and how should they how should they be thinking about it in 2015?
That's interesting. Yeah, what I've heard over the years so many times, like, well, we're, PeopleSoft shop. Can you integrate with PeopleSoft? If not, go away. And typically the vendor's answer is, oh, yeah, we can integrate, no problem. And then, they may take that at heart and say, okay, good, check that box off. But especially with startups out there, oh, yeah, we can integrate with any of the ATSs out there, whatever their answer is, right? And it's like, well, yeah, but have you? And the answer is typically no, or we're working on it, or whatever. But then again, today in the SaaS world, it's somewhat easier. There's some great, integrators out there like HRNX and Cloudmills and those guys, right? So they help make it easier as well. But a lot of times, depending on what it is, you may not even need to integrate, or at least do that as a phase two or something after you get, the core up and running. And that's, so I think it's over sensationalized. And of course, and I've worked for some of the suite providers where they're like, well, we have a unified platform, one database, all that, and that you don't need integration because it's already there, it's one system. But the reality is, and I think the last time you and I saw each other was at HR Tech Europe, right? So I had the good fortune to interview Josh Burson over there, and I asked him a similar kind of question, do you think with all these roll-ups going on, do you think integrations are still going to be important to the average buyer or consumer? Or do you see startups continuing to, bubble up and blossom, to fill different voids? And it's kind of a loaded question. I expect him to say this, and he did. It's like, yeah, there's going to be a continued churn of acquisitions and then new startups, filling in where those companies left off, or as new things, pop up, new needs like social recruiting, things that didn't exist, 4 or 5 years ago. So integrations there continue to be helpful, but I think it really, classic answer that as a consultant, I'll throw it out there is it depends.
I too have used the it depends answer. I'm familiar. So let's flip it over to vendors for a moment. I'm seeing a lot of vendors getting really aggressive about their API strategy, kind of moving out of the darkness and into the lightness, and well-documented open APIs, how ADP at HR Tech has one of the most well-documented, gorgeous APIs that they put out in front of people. You wouldn't think of ADP as an innovator. The largest payroll company in the world, yet they're doing some really innovative. What do you see? Because, we're not seeing the same stuff. What are you seeing in terms of APIs?
It's interesting. I spent some time at Kinexa, and you know, we had APIs that were published as well, and we would integrate with other systems. And when I was product manager there, you know, we'd integrate with third parties for our clients that needed different tools to complement what Kinexa had to offer. And even though we had published APIs and it looked pretty simple and straightforward, almost every time, and I can't think of a time we didn't, you know, we still had to do some customization to make it work. You know, I'm not convinced yet that that is a silver bullet by any means, but it's a great step forward. Some of the things that frustrate me a little bit, you look at, like, LinkedIn, for example, they have a gorgeous documentation for their APIs, and you know, it's so simple to digest, and it's a great model, I think, for anybody looking, you know, if they're a vendor listening to this saying, well, where should we look for examples of API documentation? They have a great one. But what's interesting is, just because it's published and it's there doesn't mean they're going to let you use it. You know, they have a 800-pound gorilla approach sometimes to the market and say, well, you know, we'll decide who can use it and when and for how long, and we can cut you off whenever we feel like it. Just keep that in mind. So it's like, okay, you know, APIs are great, but, you know, what's behind that, the companies and the people that make it either work or allow it to work is a factor that's often, you know, not considered, and that's something that needs to be looked at as well.
So I got to ask you a big data question, just because, you know, how can we have a 30-minute discussion and not talk about big data? But really, it's, you know, I'm going to take off my jaded and cynical hat for a moment. What are you seeing that's really positive out of big data? Or what's your just your general take? Again, you know, this is like Animal Farm. You've seen a lot of these stories kind of come and go through the years, and the things that become faddish. You've been through a lot of fads. What's your current take on big data?
Well, I think it's more than a fad for sure, and the reason being because although there's been a fair amount of big data out there for a while, you know, as we're talking about integrations, APIs, and things like that, there are new tools and new technology, particularly in HR, that allows us now to kind of match up and mash up that data in a way that gives us a lot of potential, right? So then that's the question is, what do you do with that? And, you know, certainly some of the vendors have been sitting on a cache load of data, you know, about the HR industry, and are starting to realize, hey, this could be useful for our clients, or maybe create a new product set. You look at eQuest, for example, they're doing some pretty interesting things, you know, with big data, because they've been moving a ton of, you know, jobs over the past 10 years or so. And, you know, now they're saying, hey, let's do something with this. And it's a, you know, there's a great example of, you know, and the results are early, but they're actually shedding some light on things that people didn't know about before. And, you know, you look at Glassdoor and others like that. Some companies were built to leverage it, so they're riding the wave now of, you know, the big data you know, popularity right now. But I would say it's more substance than fluff compared to a lot of the fads that have come and gone lately.
Okay, so I know you get asked this question at least once a week, and this is the best of breed versus suite. So, you know, you probably have people that email you and say, hey, I'm looking at, you know, this one application in talent management, but I'm really struggling with, should I get that application or should I really get the suite that has that but has the other, you know, seven technologies already attached or on the same code base? What's your kind of take or your current kind of feel for best of breed versus suite?
Yeah, I think the suite is a compelling platform of a discussion about, you know, a panacea that is rarely realized. I mean, everything has compromises, right? So you look at best of breed, where you bundle up a variety of point solutions, you can accomplish a lot, but then you have other challenges, whether it be data integration or data migration or mapping and things like that. User experience, depending on how you bridge over, could be, you know, compromised tremendously. you know, you look at some companies like Brad Informatica and companies like that, they have dozens. I think he has 35 systems just in recruitment, you know, for talent acquisition. It sounds, you know, insane, but guess what? You know, they're kicking butt and taking numbers. That being said, I'm sure there's a ton of time spent just managing all those relationships. So it goes way beyond the technology. You know, there's the old expression, one throat to choke, right? So, you know, if you have, you know, an SAP or Oracle or Workday or whatever, and you're putting all your eggs in that basket, definitely, you know, advantages from the potentially from the ease of use. But, you know, I think there's an argument to be made that says, well, you know, if you have experts and specialists in different areas, whether it be performance, comp, recruiting, whatnot, recruiting is a classic example. There's a ton of innovation going on out there by startups and, you know, the smaller players that the big fish, just there's no way they're going to be able to keep up with it because they have, you know, so many clients, so many, you know, different products that they have to continue to advance and support. And it's difficult to do, especially when certain industries like social media is changing so rapidly. So point solution, I think, you know, are going to be long-term part of the equation. Even if you have a full suite, I could see the average customer still layering on, you know, another dozen, you know, point solutions just to fill some of the gaps.
So similar but different, but it's a process versus technology. I get asked this question at least once a week, but in different kind of derivatives of it is people, you know, they're really hot on a technology. And then when I start asking them about their process, you can kind of tell that the ground's moving beneath their feet. And then you can also tell the people that are really process-centric that might not know any of the technologies. And so that, you know, the world kind of comes in these two different flavors where people are either hardwired to process and then they'll layer whatever technology on top of it, or they're searching for the technology that either already has the process baked into it or it's rigid in that it is the process. And so you don't really have a process. You just do whatever the technology says that you're supposed to, and that's your process. What's your take? You've done a lot of this stuff for a long time, so I'm just keen to really get your take on process versus technology.
Well, what shocked me over the years as, you know, companies, as I've consulted with them, because typically even though when I was in a sales role, it was very consultative because I wanted to understand what their issues and problems were so I could potentially solve them, right? Not just bash in some kind of software, say, here it is, good luck, you know, and leave. That doesn't usually work out so well. So what I've found, though, is I'd say more than half the time, the companies say, you know what, we really don't have requirements. We just want a good system that works for us. What do you recommend, they would ask.
You tell us. Of course. You tell us what our process should be.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and well, what's interesting, as absurd as it sounds a little bit to ask the vendor for that, it typically comes from the smaller companies that haven't, you know, hired a consulting firm to work through what their business requirements and processes should be, which is the way it should be done. You should do that before you select a solution and certainly before you implement it. But that being said, if you don't have that and you don't have the bandwidth or talent to properly do that and you can't afford, you know, a consulting firm to help with that, you're better off asking the vendor, say, hey, look, you know, what is your standard templates? You know, what's included in that? Can we use them as a starting point? Now, the offset then is, at least get some started with something. And typically the vendors do have, you know, dozens or hundreds of engagements under the belt where they've maybe adapted their standard configurations and templates to, you know, considerable best practice approaches. But inevitably, you know, it's not going to fit. It's like potentially a square peg in a round hole. And then, you know, and then what do you do from there? Right. It could get costly or waste a lot of time trying to reinvent it. And then, you know, who pays the price? Typically the users, because it keeps changing or it's not doing what they want. And then who gets the blame? Well, the vendor never set it up properly to begin with.
Yeah. Well, the short of that is that the vendor always gets the blame, no matter what,
right.
whether or not there's anything to do with them or not. All right, two questions. We've got about 4 minutes left. Pivot over to kind of the vendor community, because you keep an eye on all the vendors as well. What's the hottest technology? What do you think right now, if you were making some predictions for 2015, what do you think is the hottest technology out there on the market? You don't have to name brand names, but just the things that you like that you think are about to take off.
Right. Without a doubt, mobile is just huge and getting huger, if that's a word. You know, it's mm-hmm. enormous. And the reason being, and what's interesting, you know, you and I are both in the States, but globally, you know, mobile use is much higher than it is in the States. And in some places, people don't even have, you know, desktops or laptops or even tablets, you know, but they have their mobile, right? So I think it's huge for any industry, certainly HR tech. And, you know, as a new platform, if you will, that's emerging, companies are, you know, vendors are the existing ones are struggling to adapt their products or to put a new layer on top that can support that user community. And it's critical to them to do that. Some are rebuilding from the ground up, you know, to support it, but it's huge. And it also opens up, I just did an interview last week for a different group that, you know, for like time and attendance, things like that. I mean, these devices have GPS built in, fingerprint scanner, some of them, or face recognition. The powerhouse in some of these smartphones is unbelievable. And, you know, there's nothing like that on the desktop. You know, so the possibilities are endless. And, you know, so I think mobile is certainly up and coming, and you're going to see a lot of new innovation and a lot of the traditional vendors also, you know, adapting the products to support that new environment.
Nice. All right. So where do you go for inspiration? What do you, you know, blogs, people you follow, whatever the bit is, but like, where does Ward go for inspiration?
Oh my goodness. Haven't had that question before. That's a good one. Startups and entrepreneurs, that's where I, you know, because they're typically discovering issues and problems or perceived problems that they're trying to create a solution for. And it's very inspiring. You know, sometimes they're spot on, sometimes it's been there, done that, but, you know, there's always room for new things to come along. And so I'm inspired by not only the startups and discovering them through, whether it be, you know, events like HR Tech Tank or HR Unconference or some of the incubators like Talent Tech Labs and those guys. But what's interesting, the startups are also exploring ways to fit into the ecosystem, right? So for the HR tech community, you know, how do they fit? How do they add value? Because if they're just trying to go head to head with the incumbents, it's a death wish most of the time, right? So it's inspiring. It's exciting. You know, in terms of connecting with them.
Nice. Man, 30 minutes felt like 5 minutes. I could have done this for another hour. So I told you to go fast. I didn't know to go that
yeah.
fast. How do people, what's the best place to follow you or to connect with you?
Sure. Well, on LinkedIn, I'm not an open networker. So, you know, if we met or talk or plan to talk, I'd love to connect. But otherwise, on Twitter at HR Tech Advisor, or certainly through our website, HRTechAdvisor.com.
Done and done. And you put out some wonderful content over there, so please keep doing that. And I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR today and letting Ward 9 invade your ear hole. And have a wonderful Thursday afternoon. And we're going to roll out to a little cure. And thanks, Ward. Appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks, William. Enjoyed it.